protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me! Avenge me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new world
order.
I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everyone.
What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time to
touch Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Ibbity Bibbity Canal Boat. Ibbity Bibbity Canal Boat. That is all. This is the Dutch Jones radio program on Stronghold Radio. I don't even know what today is. Today is May 10th,
yep.
Tuesday, 2011. We've been gone for a couple days. We couldn't get the internet to function. There wasn't enough bandwidth. So we didn't do a show the last couple of show days. But I hopefully you guys took a nice break and went and did something with your families while we weren't around. We're coming to you from Cahuilla, California. This is the belly button of Central California, in the foothills, outside Sequoia National Park. For those of you that are new or listening to this, I want to thank everybody for tuning in, whether they're listening live right now, as I said, 5 p.m. or so Pacific time, May 10th, 2011, or the pod people. It seems only Ma's ministry has more listeners than my live ministry. But, hey, that's okay. But, you know, I'd rather have you listening to me on recording and what we're putting out with Steve and Pastor Campbell than not listening at all. So I really, really, really appreciate Olima taking the time to archive all of these shows. And she doesn't get paid to do that. She doesn't get any donations. She just does it out of a goodwill offering to the show, and we greatly appreciate that. Thank you, IC Freedom, for your donation. The church received it in the church post office box. We appreciate that. It's always good to remember why we're doing this. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the church at Cahuilla. And although some people go, oh, God, church talking about militia and survival stuff. Well, we don't really worry about those people, but we do appreciate those few, that residue, the remnant, that understand that what we're doing here is for the greater good, whether they are willing to understand it or not. Long Mother's Day weekend. I forgot to wish all the mothers happy Mother's Day. I don't get into holidays. It's not that I get all Old Testament or New Testament or anything. I try to treat people with love and appreciation every day, except for Lou, which I have to give him a double dose of love and appreciation every day. And Lou is here at my left. Stacy just ran down to get me some water. And so while she's out, we did give her a good Mother's Day. We tried not to do anything weird. We went to Sizzler, and that was a huge mistake because I haven't been to Sizzler since the economy collapsed. And now on the salad bar, all they have are turnips and iceberg lettuce, and everything else is like $20. So Sizzler is not what I remember. Should have gone to Hometown Buffet, but had it. You know, it had a good. It was funny. We had quite a few people come to Sunday church service because the pastor always does special Father's Day and Mother's Day sermons, but not what you think. If you haven't heard it, now you uploaded it, right? The sermon's uploaded. You can get it at the archives from the link from our page. A sermon he talked about JL and Deborah being good godly women, and that we need more godly daughters of Israel today, and because we are the new Israel, not that chunk of land over there. And that it was great. He talked about women who were warriors, women who were strong. So, because nowhere in the Bible does it say anything about Mother's Day. You know, honor thy mother and father. It's one of the commandments. That's a given. But so he gave a nice little sermon on that. You got to hear it. You've got to hear it. Now, this Thursday will be, instead of Warren Mark Campbell being here in person, we're going to play his sermon on jurisdiction. We've got to go find that, Lou. I know it's a nightmare to find him, but we got to find it in the archives, the physical archives, jurisdiction. You're not going to want to miss that on Thursday. Today, at 6 p.m. Pacific time, we're going to have our Code 20 friend Steve Klein. Captain Steve Klein, retired Marine Corps intelligence and battle planning and all-around good guy. He doesn't have his handlebar mustache anymore, I think. I think last time he came, he didn't have the handlebar mustache.
Yeah, he did.
Did he have it last time? I didn't recognize it. It's one of those things I don't notice. But he's going to be on. He's going to be talking about the outreach they did at Marietta High School, how that's really stirring the pot. He's going to talk about some successes in infiltrating as best he can. Not that we want to out our operatives, but that we want you to know that we can do something. We can be proactive to find out if these mosques are indeed planning hijinks and shenanigans. And we need people of all races in this. So you scumbags that call us racists, and we have Pakistani and Middle Eastern Christians that are helping us with the cause, you're obviously just ignorant. So we were going to talk about that in Code 20. I want to talk about, just jumping right into it, and I'm glad Minuteman is here because I may have him call, because I can't believe what I read in the news yesterday. An elderly woman survived for 7 weeks in a van stuck in the mud in northern Nevada on basically a bag full of GORP. What do you guys call it? Trail mix. Trail mix and putting on extra clothes for 7 weeks. And her husband, after 3 days, tried to walk out using a GPS. And obviously the GPS probably led him off a cliff or something. I don't recommend GPSs. I hate them. But I could not believe this. It's got to be a record for emotional survival. Now, I don't know exactly how much food she had. She was probably very diminished physically. She had all the water she needed. There was snow around. She could have melted snow using a cup and solar power or whatever. They're not going too much into the details. But what, 7 times 7 is what, 49 days?
Yeah,
homeschool. 49 days. And she actually said in the interview, she goes, "I thought I'd either die tomorrow or be rescued," because she had eaten her last few bits of M&M's and granola. And it just, this case has everything in it. This case has stupidity. This case has human perseverance. This case has hope for people that are lost. Their family had written them off after like the second week. They did conduct a search, but they went off the course that they were supposed to be on. They were coming home from a conference in Las Vegas. And they need to. They wanted to take a scenic route, and their GPS said, "Scenic route, go right." And they went up into the mountains and died. And I think the husband's dead. Minuteman saying, "I'm here if you need me." GPS kills a lot of people. What I'll probably have you do is call in Minuteman in a little bit with some tips after I cover this case specifically. I'd like to get some tips from you on what to do. And the interesting thing here is they had no extra food, no survival gear. They didn't make a plan. They didn't tell anybody where they were going, and everybody just thought they'd got carjacked or, you know, got sold into senior citizen slavery or something and gave up on them. Well, she's alive. Her husband, they said they're searching for the body because he probably gave in to hypothermia. Hypothermia. I always screw that. I got to say it slow, so I don't say hyperthermia. That's when you overheat. You know, giving in to the elements. And the strange thing here is that she had no training at all. But she had a psychological strength that she didn't even know she had. Somehow she kept awake. I don't know if she thought about her grandkids. She had a Bible in there. They're not really talking. The articles I found have been very short and nondescriptive, mostly talking about what they did wrong. And the key things here that are confusing to me is that in this day and age, with the amount of survival shows that are inundating us, the amount of survival guys that are selling stuff, the amount of web pages with all this, that there are still people out there that go on road trips without even the basic survival gear in their cars. And we'll talk about that in the second half hour, I guess, a little more. We'll probably have Minuteman come on and talk about what he recommends. Kind of putting him on the spot right now. I should have called him first, but this kind of came to my mind on the way up here today. There is a little excuse for these types of deaths. I'm not trying to make fun of the people and the families lost. My heart goes out to them that they lost a grandpa and a dad and a husband and all that. But if you get stuck in the snow, just follow your own tracks out. Don't turn on the GPS and go, "Hey, look, if I go cross country, it's only 10 miles. If I go back on the road, it's 20 miles. In fact, the rescuers, I think I heard one report that said they had to backtrack on ATVs 20 miles to get a cell phone signal. Now, you're saying, you know, well, how far can an old guy walk? Yeah, well, how far can you walk across snow-riddled fields versus following your own tire tracks? I think my best days when I was in top shape, trudging through snow is tough. So I have a feeling they're going to find him real close to the vehicle, and find him extremely frozen, if not eaten, by something else up there. I don't know. That terrain, southern Idaho, northern Nevada. Yeah, why don't you call in, Minuteman, and we'll put you on the air, and we'll go back and forth about this, because I think this is an important teachable moment. And tell me if you think I'm correct. I think that's some kind of record. 7 weeks? This is like somebody on an island almost, you know, lasting several years with all the resources. All she had was a minivan and a handful of GORP. Oh, my screen just went dead. So just go ahead and call in Minuteman. I'll wait for the lag here, and we can throw this back and forth and maybe discuss some other cases. Now, I've heard lots of stories about these things. I've heard some from Minuteman, and I've also heard stories of people going a few miles from their car in the desert and dropping dead from hyperthermia, from their core temperature getting too hot versus too cold. And it's funny, everybody goes, well, we need all this gear, we need all that. Really, what kills you more in all the cases, and see if Minuteman agrees with me on this, is just, you know, my opinion, not being able to maintain body warmth, whether it's shelter, clothes, or food, burning calories. I think more people that get lost die from loss of core temperature than anything else, more than a bear, although Lou wants to fight bears. He's always carrying a machete everywhere he goes. Predators. You're probably more in danger of running into two-legged types of threats in the woods around here where I'm at than you would any bear or mountain lion that's going to eat you. So people, you know, they go, oh, well, I got a gun, I got a good hunting knife. I mean, you should always have a knife in your kit, but not as a weapon, but as a survival tool. Anywhere you go, your trunk should have these things in them. I'm waiting for, is the phone on? Let's see. Did I turn it off? Oh, no, I'm on the internet now. Hang on, let me turn that off. Okay, go ahead and give me a call, Minuteman, because I got some questions for you. I want to know what you think, Minuteman. But a simple compass, a map, a plan, not deviating from that plan, would have probably saved this couple's life. A few cans of ravioli in the trunk wouldn't have lasted. I wonder who this could be.
I don't know. Look and see.
Now, are you familiar with this case that came in the media over the weekend?
A little bit. I haven't done that much reading on it, but I am somewhat familiar with it.
Now, from the very beginning, you know, they weren't going to the mountains. They were just going to a conference. They decided to take a scenic route, as noted on their $140 Radio Shack purchase TomTom GPS-type device. And first thing, do those GPS maps depict the actual conditions of roads, in your experience?
They will usually give an accurate position of the road, but what it will not cover. And an example of this is the Lee family several years ago up in Oregon.
Right.
Their GPS said, here's a shortcut that will cut 40 miles off of your trip if you go the other way. So they thought, okay, that'll save some time. So they followed the GPS. What the GPS didn't say is that was, you know, a dirt road slash logging road that was not plowed or maintained. So they got far enough up there that they got their van stuck and were unable to turn around. About a year after that, some people got GPS for Christmas. They were taking a family outing.
Stolpa.
Again, they followed the GPS, ended up in the snow where they couldn't get out. You know, fortunately, they were found. So GPS... Yeah. Your best bet always is to know how to read a regular road atlas map.
Amen.
To have an auto hub or atlas type thing where you can look up whatever the GPS says. Don't rely just on that, but check a regular map to see, is this a main road? Is it a side road? What do you mean it's not on the map?
Yeah.
Cool. I'm not going to take that.
Exactly.
And too many people rely on technology other than what used to be called common sense, which I don't feel is common anymore, but people rely too, you know, with the internet, with Wi-Fi, with all the other stuff, they put too much faith in that and do not take the time, acquire the self skills to be able to do that when you lose signal, when something just doesn't seem right. A lot of times people don't have the basics.
Right. Now, in hearing just the raw data from this one, 7 weeks Have you ever heard of anyone in unprepared, stuck in a car, surviving that long anywhere? I tried to find it, and I couldn't.
That's doing very well. There have been some people that have lasted longer, but with more supplies than what she had. The main thing she had going for her is ample water.
Yeah.
She did have some food to eat that she did sparingly with, but also a lot of times in a situation like that, your body will start to use up the body fat you have stored. Most of the times when people do not survive their survival experience is because of lack of water, or they're not able to protect the body's either heating or cooling.
Sure.
With the van that she was in, she had a means to protect from wind, and then she had something where she was able to bundle up inside.
Yeah,
even though she's
clothes.
In like a refrigerator.
Yeah, right? She had extra clothes.
Even though she's in like a refrigerator, metal box type thing, she's still protected from the wind and other stuff, which brings down the body temperature very rapidly. And she's also protected from snow and rain by being inside the van, as opposed to trying to take a tarp or piece of plastic and do something. So those are the main thing was she had ample water. She was used her food sparingly, but she had a shelter that kept her dry and protected from the wind.
Plus, it didn't sound like she was exerting any force, really. She stayed in one place, which was smart, I think. She didn't build a shelter because she had one. She didn't have to hunt for water because she was surrounded in snow. She didn't have to get up food every day. So she may have reserved a lot of calories just sitting there and sleeping and waiting for rescue.
Correct. A lot of times when you do kind of like you're talking about the hibernation type thing and just rest a lot, your body does burn less calories. It doesn't take as much to keep the body core temperature as warm because you're not expending the energy to do that. So, like you said, those are some of the main things that saved her. And it would be interesting to see in other interviews she might have. I would guess that she had a fairly strong faith in God.
Yeah, that's what I'm expecting.
Because a lot of times people that don't believe in God or have that, a lot of times don't see a purpose in their life or that there's divine intervention, you know, at times. And so one's faith is an extremely important part in helping you through a very tough situation.
Yeah, psychologically, spiritually, I mean, those things can almost be more important than, you know, a bunch of MREs in the trunk, along with training. Your attitude is everything, I would suspect.
It's a huge part of it, but like on one of the news excerpts where it had, you know, her kids and grandkids that were, you know, saying it's uncommon for them not to call, we're doing all we can and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes to get back, as far as family bonding, to feel that connection and draw for your family and obviously what they had for, you know, the mother and father,
mm-hmm.
That can also give a huge incentive to pull through tough stuff. So both faith and if there's good family relations is a huge thing to kind of overgo some insurmountable odd type things. Case an example of that with the Lee family up in Oregon when their van broke down. Mr. Lee left his wife and two daughters in the van after 3 days. Most people think, well, after 3 days, I should be found. William Shatner and the 9/11 TV crew will be up here to film me, you know, getting rescued with helicopters and all that. And, you know, Mr. Lee had a very strong desire, and he was one of those techno geeks that was really into the technology stuff, really trusted it, and it ended up, you know, causing the problem that happened. Luckily, a lot of his friends, you know, were relentless in pursuing everything they could that Forest Service and other things weren't doing. Anyway, Mr. Lee took off after the third day trying to, in other words, save his wife and children. In the process, when trackers traced where he went as far as, you know, following the footprints in the snow and the streams he crossed and how far he got, technically, he should not have survived as long as he did, and he should not have traveled as far as he did because of hypothermia, the cold, because of having wet clothes and all that. But that human drive to do everything in his human power to save his wife and daughters pushed him beyond what he should have been able to do. So that's, again, an incredible factor in surviving, is having that will and purpose.
Right.
Other point on that, if you've got someone going through a divorce or they're going through a bankruptcy or a foreclosure, a lot of times they will not have the will to survive. They break down, they're stuck. It's like, you know what the heck?
Yeah.
Everything's going to hell in a handbasket. Why the hell do I need to survive? And because of lack of hope and reason to survive, they'll die.
Yeah, I've been involved in those where you just find them sitting up against a tree and dead. You know, it's just like they just gave up, stopped feeding themselves, stopped trying to warm themselves, and there they are. It's really kind of shocking and frightening for those of us that, you know, have cushy daily lives and maybe not have been tested in such a way, to see somebody just willing to sit down and just go to sleep and not wake up.
One of the things you brought up in regard to their situation also, it's applicable in the Lee's situation and the other one. I'd have to look the other one up in my survival notes. But there's tons of stuff you can find on the internet, or literally as something as simple as at a yard sale, getting a Boy Scout handbook and what they call their 10-plus essentials, which can fit into a small school-type day pack, which can fit into the trunk of any car, whether you have it in a cardboard box or a little gym duffel bag or whatever. There's some very simple things that you can have, but the most important thing is your mental attitude and your will to survive. Once you've got that, these 10-plus essentials can make your survival experience much more comfortable and a greater chance of being found. So, again, it's not like you have to, I mean, even in Southern California or Sacramento or wherever, and you're in a city, we still have earthquakes here. You can be, you know, halfway between work and home and an earthquake happens, and all of a sudden you can't drive more than a block because everything's out. If you don't have both a survival attitude and some type of supplies, you're making it a lot more difficult to get home in one piece without, whether it's spraining an ankle or if it's raining or whatever, of having difficulties. And tons of stuff on the internet and YouTube where people can, in my opinion, basically have no excuse for not doing something.
Well, what's weird about it is that there are several different ways to get lost. This one is one where people were just going home, they saw something neat on the map or GPS, they said, hey, let's check that out. Now, there are other cases when people may be going purposefully into the back country or into harsh terrain, and they make a plan, they leave notes behind, they tell people when they're going to come back, you know, where they're going to be camping, you know, if I don't come back by this day, go ahead and call authorities. But these random rabbit trail people are really hard to understand and find. Now, as a rescuer, is there a way that you guys attack that when somebody just says, hey, so-and-so just disappeared, they should have been about here? Does it make it easier for you when it's kind of the outdoorsy type that leaves a plan, or you know, kind of run with that?
The way we teach the Boy Scouts and anywhere else I lecture is you always leave an itinerary of where you're going, whether you're going hunting for quartz crystals or taking a hike up to a special waterfall to take pictures or something like that. Let someone know where you're going, when you're going to be back, what you're driving, what road you're going to take. Because if someone goes up lost or missing, the first thing we look for is what's called PLS, which is point last seen. And if we can find or locate a vehicle, then at least we've got a general vicinity. Then we would check people on the trail to find out, have you seen, you know, these people, you know, backpacking, whether we can get a picture or description of it. Normally also, depending on the situation and how long they've been gone, dog teams would be brought up, the car would be jimmied to open the door. Normally whatever seat cushion, probably the driver's, would be used as a scent article to fire the dog off to get a dog going. You'd also set up a hasty search team that hopefully would have an idea of shoe print, shoe size, based on height and weight. And they would start scouring the trails for potential footprints. Then you set up a perimeter team, depending on your manpower, that says, okay, they've been missing for 5 hours. What's the furthest they could have gone? Then we try to put teams beyond that and then start closing back in to make sure they don't, you know, because we've got a hasty team going out looking for them, a confinement team working their way back in so that hopefully they don't get out past that. If the people, you know, just decide, you know, let's go four-wheeling out by 29 Palms and, you know, we'll get back when we get back, huge problem that way because you don't know where to start to look.
No parameters.
And if something like that happens, a lot of times you'll have to call in Civil Air Patrol and stuff like that to just start scouring areas. And those are the much, much harder to deal with.
So what this couple did was pretty much the worst-case scenario for a rescuer's point of view. They had no idea where they pulled off. They had no idea if they were even lost or a victim of a violent crime because they weren't communicating. So it would have been probably wise for them just to call somebody and say, hey, you know what? We're enjoying our drive back. We're going to take State Route 17 or whatever it is and go up and over, you know, Death Kill Mountain and see what we can see. And if, you know, that would have been the smart thing for them, don't you think? I mean, you can be flexible and contact somebody en route.
Exactly. Or if your itinerary changes, like you said, you know, we heard from some people in Vegas that such and such road is just gorgeous at sunrise or sunset or whatever it is. We're going to take that road back or explore it, let someone know, and then go do it, you know? I'm not saying you've got to be rigid, set in a routine or itinerary, but let people know if something changes. A good friend of mine a couple days showed me something that's really neat. There's a satellite type thing. I think it's called Spot.
Yeah.
Where you can activate it and it will send a signal up to a satellite saying, okay, here's where I am. So even if you can't reach the cell tower, you can do that.
Yeah.
But they've improved it even more now, where you can have, it's about the size of like a regular 25-foot tape measure, but thinner. You can activate that, and then if your phone has Bluetooth, the Bluetooth app would then talk to the satellite link. It would send a text message that you would write either to specific people or a group of people, and you can say, I'm stuck here, I'm whatever it is. Also, the satellite link also gives your GPS location. So even if you are out in the boonies like this husband and wife were, if they had that satellite link, they could text message their children, Forest Service, whoever, to let them know. And again, you still want to have the survival things, but it's another way to let people know where you are. And if anything's happened or you just broke, you know, your drive shaft, but you're all right, or if you've had a heart attack or whatever.
Yeah, I've seen those things are usually, the way I see them advertised, like Les Stroud is a spokesperson for them from Survivor Man, and it's geared towards, like, the hardcore kayaker, hiker, backcountry person. And it's, I think it's a great idea if you know you're going to be doing high-risk area hiking. It's definitely it'll help cut the cost for public safety because they just send in one crew to come and get you. Now, okay, so you tell people where you're going. If you change the itinerary, you let people know of changes. So you've done that. That's good prior planning. At the very least, that's what everybody should do. What should people have in their trunk? I mean, just going to and from the store, much less crossing a mountain pass like Grapevine or something. What kind of things do you recommend people put in the trunk of their car?
Since we both live in California, and hopefully lots of your listeners do other than the pod people, a simple thing is a jug of water, you know, and treat it so it's not going to get algae on it. There's been a number of articles that do not suggest plastic, like let's say you've got the regular sparklets or whatever, drinking bottles, like, you know, when you're going out to see a baseball game or whatever. In the heat of the trunk of a car, there's some chemicals released into the water that aren't healthy. But in a survival situation, if that's what you've got, it'll work. You know, the idea is you don't leave a case of the sparkless water bottles in your trunk and drink those, you know, whenever.
Right.
First of all would be water. Second would be some type of shelter. And a simple shelter is literally a military poncho or a tube tent, stuff like that. Like Mark Kornke talks about, having a wool blanket or a couple wool blankets in there that you could bundle people up in if their clothes get wet, if something happens. Also, like Mark talks about, at the Dollar Tree store or the 99-cent store, you can get gloves, whether it's for kids or small women. For me, they don't have that size. But you can get gloves for a buck a pair. So you put several of those in there, so in case something gets dirty or torn, you've got something else to do. Your main categories that you're looking for is shelter, you know, to protect your body, you know, warmth and heat and all that. Water, and then some form of signaling, and obviously first aid. Your car is a tremendous wealth of potential signaling things, be it your side mirrors, your rear view mirror, your battery that you can use to start fires with, taking out headlights for signaling, taking out your lighter and literally, you know, tearing your seats apart. In fact, one lady died out by helmet because she had a fairly new car and she didn't want to take the car apart by making, you know, a little igloo inside, so she walked off to try to find help and died of hypothermia in the process. You know, if it's a point where your life can be in jeopardy, like the lady and her husband, you know, you tear out the headliner, you tear the carpet out of the trunk, you know, tear the seats apart to make a pile of
debris,
insulation to put over you, and then put the wool blanket over that.
Yeah.
The heavy space blankets work very good. You can have, there's a thing, now do you need to go to break?
No, we're fine. Keep going. This is good stuff. We're not going to break while we're rolling like that, unless you want to go to break.
Okay. There's some products out. One's called a Millennium Bar.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like it's a mainstay bar, but they come in like coconut, cherry, apple, you know, a bunch of different flavors. Try them, see if you like them. And then there's also the SOS or mainstay bars, which kind of taste like a shortbread cookie.
Yeah.
I mean, they taste good. It's not like eating a handful of dirt. but with the mainstay bar, that kind of stuff, because it's a lifeboat ration, it can sit in the sun of a lifeboat, you know, at 130 degrees for 5 years.
Yeah.
And she'll be good.
And they don't dehydrate you to eat them either. They're kind of gooey and have a little bit of moisture to them.
They're not really gooey, but they don't take the moisture out of the body the way if you were eating like a power bar or something like that would. Yeah. They also are done in such a way that you don't have to eliminate as often as if you were eating regular food.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's something you can put in your trunk. It will stay good and last for up to 5 years. Now, if you want to add, you know, some power bars or, you know, some cans of tuna or whatever that you rotate, that can be helpful too. Some type of rain protection, be it a poncho, or I don't recommend the poncho you can get like for $1.25.
Yeah, they fall apart.
Home Depot or whatever, because duct tape can really be handy if you've got to mend a torn poncho or something like that, or, you know, a window of your car breaks where you can tape up some cardboard or plastic over it.
Yeah, keep it cold out.
Signaling-wise, you know, whether you, again, your best bet is usually, not always, but to stay with your vehicle.
Yeah.
Tons of resources, protection from wind, cold, rain. You know, even if it turns over upside down, provided it's not sitting in, you know, an irrigation
precarious,
or whatever.
Yeah.
That's still going to be a better source for you than trying to walk out, especially if you don't know the direction. For outdoor type stuff, you want to have a whistle, a compass, dry clothes or a change of clothes, but the wool blanket would help with that. You want to have some means of starting a fire. If you're backpacking, you'd want to have like a signal mirror or something like that that you can, you know, alert others, you know.
What about footwear? I mean, so many of, especially like in L.A. Ah! Was that... Did you hang up? Sorry about that. Sounds like you're in a command center. Dispatch.
No, it was my other phone ringing.
Oh, sorry about that. A lot of things, like in L.A., after earthquakes, I see all these women walking around with their bare feet because they go to work in high heels. They don't have an extra pair of tennis shoes or hiking boots in their car. Now, men can learn from that, too, because, I mean, like the shoes I have on right now, they're nice, like, pull-on tennis shoe type things, you know, that old people wear. But you're going to want to put some kind of hiking shoes or boots in your trunk that are well-worn in. At least I would say so.
Absolutely right. If you look at when the Islamic terrorist massacre of September 11th happened, going out from the World Trade Center, it looked like a shoe store exploded. There were shoes everywhere because, like you said, as the women were coming down the stairwells or trying to navigate over the debris in high heels or whatever, it was very, very difficult to do, so they literally took their shoes off. Mm. I'm sure a lot of people ended up with very bad cuts on their feet.
Yeah.
There was a gentleman that the day before the World Trade Center went down, he had a really nice pair of, you know, wingtip business type shoes, and apparently the sole was getting worn, so he brought it into the shoe repair place to get new soles put on. When he left the World Trade Center, he was wearing a pair of crepe sole shoes, the ones that are like the rubber gum eraser type stuff.
Uh-huh.
He was wearing a pair of those shoes, and when he finally got to his destination, the whole bottom of his shoe was full of glass shards. That if he had, was wearing his other pair of shoes, they would have gone through it.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, having some type of sturdy shoe, and first of all, you know, it's fine to have a pair of shoes in the trunk of your car, and whoever else potentially rides it, if you've got a 12-year-old girl that's taking tennis lessons or whatever, now have shoes for each member of your family in there. And like you said, that's well broken in. And another important point on that is if you work in an office building, like on the 10th floor, have a pair of shoes in your desk or the file cabinet, wherever you can put them, so that if you have to leave the building and you can't get to your car because it's in the parking garage that's crushed, you still have some means to traverse without wearing high heels, going across glass and debris where you're going to break your ankle.
Yeah, it's true.
Another important point also, if you've got either tennis shoes or boots or whatever you're going to have as your alternate pair of shoes, in an article I was reading off of Survival Blog recently, the guy talked about taking the regular shoelaces off and then using parachute cord, the 550 cord, because of all the strands you have to do other things with. Then he took a small jigsaw blade, took out the insole of his boot, put the jigsaw blade in there and duct taped it in, then the other one he put like the magnesium bar type thing.
Yeah.
Not the bar, but the flint strike thing, the other one. So literally in his shoes, if he got lost, he could literally take the insoles out, take out the hacksaw blade and the other, strike rod to start a fire. Which I thought was an interesting thought that I hadn't thought of.
Yeah. Yeah, your ingenuity is limited only by the space and how much you're willing to carry. And you touched on something a little bit ago, not just having a kit in your car, having a kit at work, even just a little Tupperware container full of the basics and a pair of shoes and maybe a decent pair of pants and a glove. Everybody has some place they can stash something at work, whether it's in your locker, whether it's under your desk, somewhere. You know, if you're on the move, put it in your vehicle because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, unless you're a contractor and a construction worker and you have durable tools and clothes with you everywhere you go, school, work, church, have something everywhere.
Even with my line of work, I always carry, in one of the compartments on the truck, I always carry some basic survival stuff because, you know, yeah, I got tools on there and I got sturdy clothes I'm wearing, but, you know, if it's raining or cold out, you still need additional stuff if you're going to walk home without getting hypothermia or whatever.
Now, you've shared some cases with us of people that just went out for like a weekend walk, end up, you know, dead. I know the one about the crater. I can't remember the name of the crater that you shared down in Southern California. What was the name of that crater?
That was in the Morongo Desert area.
Sure.
And
sure.
It was a it was an aerobics instructor out from the Lancaster area. Her name was Patty, and they went out, I think it was on Father's Day, her and her boyfriend, and I'll get back to that in a minute. One of the important things, besides, like, more important than all the things we've been talking about, the parachute cord, the signal mirror, most important thing is your mental status, having a positive mental attitude. You can have all the fun gadgets and toys and stuff like that, but if you don't have that will to survive, like we talked about, whether you're going through a divorce, a foreclosure, whatever, you know, if you don't have that, you're not going to make it. Whether it's stuff on YouTube or classes you can take, and there's a tremendous amount of stuff on YouTube on how to start a fire, how to build a shelter, how to, you know, build a snow debris shelter. Practice, you know, get the stuff that you can find either in the Boy Scout book or on YouTube. Get and practice some of those skills. Some friends of mine up in Idaho practice making a shelter, or not a shelter, starting the fire when there's 30 mile an hour winds and the temperature is like 20 degrees out. Well, that takes some practice to do that, and you find what works, what doesn't work. If you can start the fire, even if you use a road flare, and it's, you know, 20 degrees or 15 degrees and a 30 mile an hour wind, that helps with your positive mental attitude of knowing you can. It's not like the match has got wet, now what am I going to do? So practice the skills that are necessary. Even if you only go out twice a year, who's to say that one of the times Murphy's not going to come with you and make it an interesting situation? Anyway, back to the situation with Patty and her boyfriend. She was an aerobics instructor. She worked in an air-conditioned office building. She had an air-conditioned car. She did her aerobics in an air-conditioned gym. So even though the temperature might be 110 to 120 outside, she was always basically used to being in an air-conditioned environment. If you're not used to the heat, that can take a tremendous toll on you when all of a sudden you're put out in the oven. She was fit as far as aerobics go, but that's different than weightlifting or hiking. It's a different set of muscles, different stuff that you use. Her and her boyfriend went and ate at the Ludlow Cafe at about 11:30 a.m. They had coffee, eggs, toast, you know, all that kind of stuff on a regular breakfast. They did not drink any water. They had coffee.
Diuretic.
What a lot of people don't realize is when you eat food, if you eat 20 ounces of food, you're going to need 20 ounces of water to help that go through the stomach and digestive system. If you don't have that, the stomach and intestines will start pulling fluid out of the blood to run it through, so you're automatically dehydrating even though you think you drink coffee. Any coffee, tea, or cola has what's called a crystalline alkaloid, which is a very, very powerful diuretic. Anyway, so they had their breakfast and headed off to the Morongo crater where there's petroglyphs out there that they wanted to take pictures of and look at and all that. They drove their car out on a dirt road. There's no paved roads out by this part. Parked the car. It's kind of rolling hills, but the hills can be anywhere from 10 to 20 feet high, you know, just rolling hills. You can see the petroglyphs or the crater from when they parked their car. Headed on up there. Now, the temperature was 117 degrees out there. First of all, it's black lava sand out there, so that's going to both absorb the heat and radiate it up. Anytime the temperature is above 110 degrees, you should always wear a long sleeve cotton shirt, long pants, because basically what your body's trying to do is act like a swamp cooler when it sweats to cool itself down from overheating the computer. When you've got bare exposed skin, all that moisture instantly evaporates. The swamp cooler can't work properly, so you overheat much, much quicker. Also, you should have a broad brimmed hat on to protect your little computer upstairs from frying. What happened is, because we don't know what Patty ate for dinner, but, you know, from the daytime wise, with going out in the high heat that she wasn't used to, having the breakfast where she's automatically dehydrating, when she went up, she had a pair of sunglasses.
a tank top and short pants. They had a cooler full of sodas, but they didn't take any sodas. They just took their cameras and headed off. By the time that Patty got to the base of the crater, which was about 25 minutes from the time they left their car, she was in severe dehydration. She pounding headache, blurred vision, difficulty walking. Told her boyfriend, "I'll wait here. You go up." And she sat down, you know, under a greasewood bush. Well, when you get lower to the ground like that, there's more intense heat lower to the ground because of the black sand absorbing the sun heat. Mm. Boyfriend got up there, looked around, took a couple pictures, could see the car, came back down, saw that Patty was really having some problems, helped her walk another 40 or 50 feet. But at this point, when they got down to the ground part, they were unable to see the car. No compass, no marking which way. So they headed off in the wrong direction, had just about another quarter of a mile and collapsed. Boyfriend sat her underneath a bush and was going to go for help. Boyfriend took off, couldn't find the car, but did make it to the highway. Patty thought, you know, if he can make it, I can make it. Again, delirious, incorrect.
Not good judgment, yeah.
Goes about another 30 feet on her hands and knees trying to get help, crawls up underneath a bush and dies. Boyfriend makes it back, hitches a ride to the Ludlow Cafe, asks people for help to find her, and they think he's kind of whacked out. No one really comes. Eventually, he calls 911. CHP sends a helicopter out. When a body expires and the blood sits, it goes into an acidotic state, which actually changes the skin color. Mm. She was a Caucasian female, and by the time the CHP helicopter got there, her skin was already starting to turn black, the exposed skin, because of the sun beating down on it.
Wow.
Daryl Heller was a tracker that tracked, you know, where she was and what happened and kind of the sequence of events. From the time she left the car to the time the CHP helicopter got there was 2.5 hours.
Okay.
Because she was already dead and the skin turning the color, they estimate that between an hour and 25 minutes to an hour and 45 minutes, somewhere in that area from the time she left the car, is how long it took her to expire.
Wow.
So there's what's called the rule of threes in survival. You've got 3 minutes to find air, be it an avalanche or mudslide. You've got 3 hours, basically, to find shelter. You've got 3 days to find water, 3 weeks to find food. She didn't even make it halfway through the 3 hours for shelter and expired on it.
Yeah, condition.
So things can happen very rapidly if you make incorrect or wrong choices and don't use wisdom. I can't say God-given wisdom, because a lot of times you do have to study and learn to acquire the skills and attitude it takes to survive.
Yeah, if you're going to venture into these harsh environments, and trust me, anything outside of your house is considered a harsh environment as far as I'm concerned, and even then, you've got a responsibility as an individual to guard your life and to learn these things, and what more so if you have a family that you're taking with you. Everybody, you know, loves the stories about, oh, Dad took us camping and it was a nightmare, and we all chuckle about that. But the reality is that you should be able to take your family camping and have it go great. You know, there are going to be little things. Somebody forgets the poles, and then you figure out a way to make it work anyway for the tent. And it just amazes me that city folk, and not all country folk are wise in these ways. You take them into the city, they're going to fail miserably too. But the city folk just, they rely so much on artificial everything, that they don't realize that 60 miles from where they're sitting enjoying a latte, like I'm talking about Los Angeles, is high desert. You know, and like people going over Cajon Pass and getting stuck in snowstorms at Cajon Pass. That I always love that. What do you mean snow in Southern California? You know, what do you mean I can't walk out with my shorts and flip-flops?
What cracks me up on that, as you know, I've got friends that live up in Idaho, and I've driven up there lots of times, and going through the Salt Lake City area, they had like 4 inches of snow on the freeway, all lanes. It was snowing hard, continuing to snow. Up in Utah and Idaho, people don't drive with chains. They just know how to drive in the snow.
Yeah.
And on the opposite side, you see big snow plows clearing it, but people are driving
on the snow and just driving slower. Sometimes you see cars, you know, off the side of the road. You get it to Tahoe Pass, you get a half inch of snow. We've got to close the whole thing down.
300 car pile.
They're going to slide off the road.
Yeah.
But
escorting people through one at a time, yeah. It's people have grown so soft and so dependent upon equipment and other people to make them comfortable and to keep them alive, that the conditioning that we once had, that our, you know, ancestors 120 years ago. It's like we were talking about the game Oregon Trail. You know, the easy way was to go way up north and make it across in the game. For those of you that know the game, anybody that went like through Utah, they lost their entire stuff because they'd be going across in the desert the wrong time of year and stuff. If you're going to travel in those places, you have to have the skills. And so many people go on, oh, let's go to Palm Springs for the weekend. They don't realize between their air-conditioned house and the air-conditioned resort they're going to is the potential for death and calamity.
Exactly. One of the things I truly appreciate is for the men and women that volunteer to be leaders and all that for the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts,
mm-hmm.
because this gives city kids or country kids or wherever a chance to really learn outdoor skills, how to set up a camp, how to cook, how to clean your pots and pans, how to do a menu, you know, going on hikes, what to bring on your hike. Tremendous things. With the Boy Scout troop I was with, one of the boys, ready for what's called a camporee, which is where once a year they have big get-togethers where the Scouts get on their skills for first aid and pioneering, and it's just a neat experience for the boys. And some boys saw us getting ready. We had pizza for our boys while they're loading up the trailer and getting ready to go and do their thing, because it can be a late night by the time they get there and set up camp and all that, so we wanted to have some food for them. Some friends of one of our boys saw us doing that and saw the pizza we had and asked if they could have some pizza. I said, no, it's for the boys. So they asked again if they could have pizza. I said, no. And then they recognized one of our boys and went up to him and started talking to him. So I kind of moseyed on over there to see if they were going to ask this particular scout to get some pizza for him. And they started questioning him about what you were going to do and all that. And the boy said, well, we're going to a camp where we're going to get tested on first aid and how well we set up our camp and all that. You're going to sleep outside? They're serious on this. And he said, and he got this like weird look on his face. He said, yeah. He goes, you're sleeping outside in a tent?
Yeah.
He said, of course we are.
Yeah.
And then dead serious, his kid says, aren't you scared?
Hmm.
And the particular boy said, no. But it showed me an insight, like you talk about city boys that maybe play Sim City or Halo or whatever on the computer. And, you know, their outdoor experience is going from their home to the bus stop to go to school. There are a lot of kids, and unfortunately adults too, that don't have the common sense. They don't know how to start a campfire, then you dump a gallon of gas on it and throw a match at it. You know, they don't, the skills, be it pioneer skills or just outdoor skills, to a large majority of people is a lost art. But again, thank goodness for Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, where kids and adults can do a good job of reclaiming those skills.
It's funny, one of the things that I've always said, it's like what we call survival skills today is what my grandfather called chores.
And, exactly.
You know, and even my dad, you know, my dad, who's in his 60s, you know, it was stuff that he would, when he'd go hunting for deer, he wouldn't take a camper or a mobile home or motor home. He'd take a tarp, some rope, some knives, and his, in like 20 rounds of ammo and a rifle, and he'd go, you know, with what he had on his back.
Yep.
And you know, and maybe some beef jerky and some cup of soup and stuff like that, but that would be, you know, considered a luxury. And it just amazes me that there is no common self-preservation mode in American people today. And it's strange. And I don't know. I don't, you know, you get these great organizations that try, you know, to train people, and there's so many places out there now. And so many people that are offering this training, and it is expensive, I mean, but because you've neglected a lifetime of perseverance training, you have to pay now for it to get some retrospect going. So I say it's worth it to take some of these classes. If not, you know, we're doing stuff up here. We're going to tap Scott here over the summer to have him do some stuff up here. We're going to tap a lot of people to be training people to do things.
Well, like I said, there's some really good information on YouTube. There's also some stuff that I disagree with, but, you know, it's my choice. But, you know, again, for Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, if you're an adult and you've got a young kid, volunteer to help on that kind of stuff. You know, get your kids involved in Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, or pick up where you are, just do family camping.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Sequoia up there, which is a beautiful place. You know, and if you head up to Sequoia, plan on it. You've got an extended weekend, so you can stop by the church and meet Pastor and Dutch and all that. But head up to Sequoia, see some beautiful country that God created, and learn some skills that will definitely help you, you know, even if it's just enjoy the outdoors more.
You know, and people say they don't have the opportunities, you know, and they say, well, you're lucky, you're surrounded by it. When I lived in L.A., in, you know, what they call the Inland Empire, just the armpit of the area, and I'm sorry if I have listeners there, but I lived in, you know, the San Bernardino area.
No, Blythe is the armpit.
Well, oh, man, Blythe is pretty bad, too. But, like, San Bernardino, at least one weekend a month, I would drive as fast as I could home from work Friday, load up my 4x4, and call a couple buddies, and we'd go camping, period. And I found a way to do it. You can find a way to do it. It's sacrificial. And you don't have to have all the – that's the point. You don't take a bunch of fancy stuff with you. You go primitive, you know, with what you can. Like I said – go ahead.
One of the things I'm teaching in my survival classes, and I actually live this too, is like on some of the weekends, whether it's Memorial weekends or whatever, when my son was little, I'd take my son and my mom and we'd go up to a camp place up here. I'd bring a Dutch oven. I'd bring chicken, potatoes, you know, stuff like that. I would bring, it's Marshall Foster's book, but it's kind of the equivalent to the Providential History of America. And I'd read about our pioneers, what they did, and then we'd actually cook food like they did. But like I teach in my survival classes, a good way to help the kids for, you know, a Teotihuacan situation or whatever, is you read the Little House on the Prairie series and what they did, what they went through, how their winters were like. So the kids kind of get an idea of both, you know, the mental picture. Then you go out and do the camping, like you said, you know, to give the hands-on experience of doing it. And sometimes, like you said, it's just saying, hey, I'm coming home, we're grabbing the ice chest and the camping gear, and we're going to go out and, you know, enjoy it.
Spontaneous getting out of Dodge and just enjoying what God made for us. Well, Minuteman, thank you so much for calling in. We got to do this more often. I love just the back and forth on this stuff. We're going to take a break now. That hour flew by. And get ready, folks. We're going to have Code 20 on. I don't know if Liberty Tree Radio has been carrying us or not. Hopefully they'll pop in. They've been popping in as guests from time to time when I thought they weren't carrying us. So we're going to go to a break right now, and we'll be back on Stronghold Radio right after this. Okay, stand by, Scott.
Was a victim of the changes that came when his land was a sprouting seed, and the wrongs he did were multiplied in legend, with young Australia growing like a weed. Ned Kelly took the blame, Ned Kelly won the fame, Ned Kelly brought the shame, and the Ned Kelly hanged. Well, he hid out in the bush and in the forest, and he loved to hear the wind blow in the trees, while the men behind the badge were coming for him. Ned said, they'll never bring me to my knees. But everything was change and run in cycles, and Ned knew that his day was at an end. He made a suit of armor out of plowshares, but Ned was brought down by the trooper's men. Ned Kelly took the blame, Ned Kelly won the fame, Ned Kelly brought the shame, and the Ned Kelly hanged.
when the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
There's rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points, boom! We'll set him roadblocks everywhere!
A new world order. A new world order. A new world order.
A new world order.
I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time to
touch Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time again for Stronghold Radio, coming to you live from the little hamlet of Kaweah. It is May 10th, 2011. It's Thursday, which of course means it's Code 20 Day, and we have Steve Klein on the line. Are you there, Steve?
I'm here, and Code 20 is burning them up, burning them up, dude. It's going awesome.
Great, great, great. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. We had a little pre-show conversation. I went to the website you told me about and read all the stuff there. And you just take it wherever you want to start, and I'll fill in the holes with weird commentary.
Well, Dutch and Stacey and Lou and all the rest of you out there, the Church of Kaweah is kicking butt and taking names for the Lord Jesus. I just get so tickled now. I don't get frustrated anymore. I laugh when people say, but there's so few of us, we can't do anything. It's like, why don't you get out of bed? Why don't you have some bacon and eggs and some coffee? Dude, why don't you come out? It's a piece of cake. Pastor Warren Campbell, Dutch, Stacy, Lou, what they're doing at the Church of Kaweah. We got the epicenter of Code 20 and taking on the bad guys, the evil guys. And it's going good. It is going in Europe, in Australia, all over the world. Code 20, in the last 15 days, I'm buried. I got so much to do, so much stuff going on. Driving the Muslims absolutely insane. We caused a giant firestorm in an upscale neighborhood in Riverside County, Murrieta, California, Temecula, California. We've been going to Corona. What's going on is we just go out, two or three of us, and we go to these high schools, and we're passing out these flyers about Muhammad, and it's funny as heck. If anybody wants a copy of this flyer, just send an email to a Dutch. I guarantee you it gets these schools going insane. It crushes and burns to a cinder the insanity of multiculturalism. The school administrators absolutely hate these First Amendment educational outreach letters because it destroys their lie that they teach all day long, all year long about multiculturalism, because we come out and we prove with YouTubes, with the Quran, with the Hadith, real simple, real easy, that Muhammad was a pedophile, that Islam is satanic and subpar, creating the highest degree of hostility, disorder, slavery, poverty, and misogyny, and the school administrators, the school superintendent, the board of education, all of these guys, they cannot handle it. They don't know what to do. We got police or sheriff protection. We pass out these flyers. The kids go to their iPhones and their droids. They watch the video of these two Muslim guys talking about Muhammad having sex with a little six-year-old girl, Aisha, and then Ayatollah Khomeini did the same thing. And now we've gone to the next level we will all remember that when Martin Luther nailed a 95 thesis on the door, that Christianity through Europe was pretty much dead, but then the students got a hold of his 95 thesis, and the Reformation sparked into a big firestorm and swept all of North and Western Europe and went to England, came to the United States, Australia, New Zealand, all of that empire that the English used to have, and we're doing the same thing now. And it all goes back to the Church of Kuia. It goes back to Warren Campbell, Dutch Jones, Stacy Jones, and Big Bad Lou. Lou, when I come up there for training with Larry Wick, do not beat me up. I ask you, please, in public, do not embarrass me. I'm an old man. Do not beat me up, okay? Little humor there. Little humor. Dutch, you went to those websites.
Yeah.
And we are able, you can see the difference when we use history, Nuremberg trial, the Quran, First Amendment, constitutional First Amendment litigation, precedents and cases, and we just quietly put it in there. And you can see the Muslims at first, they come in, they go crazy and insane, and all of a sudden we're able to flip it on them, and they're going away like weak little lambs now. We will be back at that high school. We're suing that city. We will win that lawsuit.
Wow.
We will go back to that city. We will teach, or I'm sorry, to that high school where they treated us so badly, but we still were successful. We will teach that high school about the First Amendment, and then we will teach them about Islam, and I'm going to be laughing my butt off the whole time.
Well, what I liked about it is Jim Horn, the guy that was the lead person on that, Somebody attacked him and saying, well, where do you get off? How many college degrees do you have? What training do you have to be judging Islam like this? And then he hit him with his resume. Well, I lived 10 years in Islamic nations. I was the head of military intelligence. I helped design the defenses for like 9 embassies. And it just boom, 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 boom. And I was laughing so hard. You know, he goes, but of course that doesn't equal up to your pot-smoking professor kissing up 2 days when you went to a liberal college now, does it? So I thought that was great.
We're having fun doing this. You can do it too. Now, what we're going to do is take the thread of the Firestorm thoughts. We're going to copy their questions or their response and then our answers. We're going to put it together, put it into a Word product, and then anybody that wants to go out and do this can do that, and you'll have the answers. So while you just pass, we do not talk. When we pass out the flyers, we don't talk. We just hand the flyers out, tell them it's about the First Amendment. It lasts about 15 minutes. We're gone.
Yeah.
Then we've gone to this thing now called Patch, P-A-T-C-H. Dutch, you looked at it. You
yeah.
probably have a better feel for it than I do. Go ahead and explain how the patch, this
well,
thing works.
I just went to www.patch.com, patch.com, P-A-T-C-H, clicked on California, and then I went to Murrieta to see what was going on there, and it was a local. It's a little more than a blog. It's kind of like a newspaper person uses civilian input, you know, just resident input, and they talk about topics that are important in the community. And it said, anti-Islam group hands out leaflets at local high school. And then there's just this thread of just liberal vitriol, which is a good word that I like this week, that attacking the people for handing out these flyers, which were truth. An anti-Christian sentiment, multicultural pro-garbage, hippie liberal garbage. But the neat thing is that the people from the First Amendment folks are answering them politely at first, and they get strong when they need to, but they're just like, no, here are the facts. Go look at these. Go look at these websites. Go read these verses in the Quran. I liked what you posted too, Steve. And
thank you.
And it was like, you know, oh, but again, I ask you, and they keep at, when they don't like the answer, they just keep reasking the question because of their willful ignorance. They don't understand the concepts here. And what people don't realize is Murrieta, to give you an idea where it's at, it's just north of Temecula, where one of the largest mosques in California was just completed or is being built, Steve. I can't remember.
Being built.
Yeah. So it's imperative that these little communities and their kids get the truth that they're not getting in their fifth grade social sciences books, social brainwashing books that tell them how great Islam is. And parents were then keying in and saying, look, these guys were right. Look what they taught them in the fifth grade about Islam. It's not true.
So they have just as much right to hand that out. And, of course, everybody says, well, what if the Muslims want to come and do that? What if so-and-so wants to come and do it? And they're like, well, that's fine, but they already get their time in the classroom. This is equal time on the street corner across from it. And I think it's a great thing. And this patch network, I'd never seen it before. I highly recommend people go look at it, find your state, find your community, and start using it. I think it's magnificent the way they're doing it. If you hear gunfire in the back, that's our pastor practicing precision accurate firing with a 308, by the way, an M1A1. He's been shooting all day. So, no, we're not under attack. It's just our pastor. He's exercising his Second Amendment right, but more importantly, his God-given right to self-defense. He's training. I told him, I said, go. He goes, do you mind if I shoot during the show? I'm like, no, I think it'll give great backbound background ambiance. So just boom, the dog works.
So you guys are safe.
Yeah, I know he's got my back out there, and that's what it's all about.
So you guys are safe.
Yeah, definitely. I love having a pastor that I know can take the shot that may save my fat fanny someday. So it's important, very, very important that we use all these outlets. So this patch thing, they started it on Patch. Somebody wrote this article, put up like 8 photos. They were taken by someone who was just supposedly a parent, but it turns out they were actually a photographer for the local newspaper. So there's kind of some disingenuous, you know, the press was there but didn't identify themselves, I think. Is that right, Steve?
Yeah, exactly. But what they meant for evil is becoming good. It's working really good. And we also have some other really interesting things, too. We have two moles, two 007s have infiltrated two of the major terrorist cells in the United States. The only clue I will give you is that it's in the 50 United States. That's all I will tell you. I will tell you that these two people, I'm not going to say anything who they are or anything of, these two people have been working with me with Code 20 for over a year and a half. They've been listening, they've been watching, and one guy cracked a major cell, and he's actively checking it out. He knew about him. But in the providence of God, it was an athletic issue that came up, and this guy, he cracked this big terrorist cell somewhere in the United States, and he's laying low, he's doing his thing, and then we had another guy, I will say this, this other guy cracked a major mosque, it's a hellhole in the United States, big mosque, one of the biggest mosques in the United States. Got some of the most dangerous Muslim terrorists in it. He followed my advice. I gave him some suggestions. He will not go back to that mosque. He will not go to other mosques because some of the stuff he told me, I listened to him and I said, okay, you've been compromised, but you've done your job. And while he was there, the knuckleheads in the mosque were actually showing him things they should not have been showing him. And so, once again, Code 20, the Church of Quia, Warren Campbell, Dutch Jones, Stacey Jones, Bad Boy Lou, and I don't think Lou is involved in the mix there.
Not yet, he's too young.
Okay, I'm leading. We got the Murrieta High School, the Patch, www.patch.com. We got this firestorm. I'm talking firestorm. These people are going insane. We're going back. We're going to beat them with the First Amendment. We're beating them with cell warfare. The people that went out with us, they got Code 20 explained to them. They love it. They understand it. We're going to sue the city. We're going to beat the city on a First Amendment issue. But now, just like my two moles, they got inside, and now we got the Muslims all agitated, which is what I want. When people are agitated, when they're really angry, that's when they start listening. It's fascinating. When people think, oh, you know, those guys, you made them all upset. Well, when you make them upset, you say, Muhammad's a pedophile, and you show them, what did I show, like 10 different verses out of Islamic scholarship sources that Muhammad was a pedophile. There's not much they can say except lie, but they get angry, and they start thinking. Some of them will come along, maybe 1 in 1,000. That's okay. That's for God. The other 999... they're going to face Larry Wick training because these two fellows that infiltrated these terror cells and the Murrieta Muslims, when they come against Jim Horn and me, both of us, well, we don't need Larry Wick training. We're glad we're getting it. We know it will improve our skills. And I want everybody to go to Larry Wick training. In fact, well, I can't say too much, but I'm now carrying some interesting ink pens with me wherever I go.
Good.
And I've been showing my wife a few tricks, but if you get into this stuff eventually, Islam has no choice but to turn violent. So let's transition and segue into Larry Wick training. And how many people do we have signed up now, 23, 24?
Yeah, it's up in the mid-20s now. We've got 18 people prepaid as of yesterday, and we've got about another five that are that will bring their money when they get here, five or six, actually. And then there's a couple people that asked me for information today, so we'll see. And I talked to Larry Wick yesterday or today, I can't remember which it was, and he's excited. He's overnighting me, or actually not overnighting me, sending me the training devices, the demilitarized weapons. He said it's awfully hard to fly with a pistol with no firing pin in it, that even if you show him there's no firing pin in it. He goes, he gets so many hassles. He gets searched all the time now. And so he's going to UPS them or Federal Express them to me overnight. So we'll have the weight in your hand of what a weapon feels like when you're taking it away from a thug, and things like that. So it's good. I want to comment on something you said before the transition here. You said, you know, we're getting them enraged, we're getting them angry. What we're doing is we're choosing the time of battle when we do that.
Yep.
They're going to trigger at their own time if we don't force them to trigger it. When do you want to fight your enemy? When you choose the time of battle. So the naysayers out there are like, well, you should just leave them alone. You're not hurting anybody. No, they are hurting people. They're lying in wait. It's like having a rabid dog in your backyard. Do you want to go out there in the middle of the night and hope he doesn't get you? Or do you want to go out there in the light of day with a shotgun and yell at him and scream at him so he comes out from under the shed and then blast him? So just a comment on that, so people that might misinterpret agitating the enemy. No, you provoke them into fighting when you want to. It's recon by fire. But, yeah, the Larry Wick thing, I'm excited. You got people sleeping all over the church property, all over the ranch here. I almost said compound, and that makes people mad when I use the term compound. But the trailer will be ready for you and your group, and then I know Minuteman's going to be in the church office in the hide-a-bed that we have there. We've got people, Joshua's coming. He's deciding whether or not he's going to camp or come down with you guys, maybe camp in the front yard of that facility down there. We're going to make rooms here in the library available, a couch and a couple beds for people that want to stay out. Now, it's been raining at night, but nothing that you guys can't handle, of course, if you're sleeping outside.
No problem. And Dutch nailed it again. Dutch is the mighty master up there. We are masters of disaster. We're setting the Muslims up. The Muslims are networking. They're underground. They're building up their cell networks, and they don't expect any Americans, especially Christians, to have the courage to come out and do what we are doing in present tense and present progressive tense. We'll continue to do. Right. I'm speaking all over Southern California now. We got these high school deals next year. I have a hunch we'll hit at least 100 high schools throughout Southern California, because now people are learning how the system works, and that's what Dutch and I and Larry Wick and Pastor Warren Campbell are all about, training, bringing up disciples. And so we have caused the Muslims to blow their cover.
Yeah.
So we're not harassing them. We're just getting them to act as Muslims do, just like
tripping
getting Nazis to act like, getting them. They're not prepared. They're not ready. They're certainly, I can tell, they're shocked at the answers that Jim Horn and myself gave back to them, and they're shaking their heads, they're losing control, they're getting their butts kicked. Now, also on Code 20, I ran into a Navy jet pilot, a real one, not that joker that came up there. This gentleman's name is Al Houghton, H-O-U-G-H-T-E-N. I've talked to him. I listened to him. I'm going to have him on my television show. He wrote a book, Jesus and Justice, and he prays in imprecatory psalms.
Oh.
And he's got a five-step program of five layers of God's love starting, and he uses this system so that we can pray against evil people to let God kill them.
Yep.
This is biblical. When Ananias and Sapphira came before Peter, a lot of people think, well, think about it. First, Peter comes, or I think it was the old man came in, and Peter kills him by just talking. And then the wife comes in and says, yeah. Behold, your husband is dead at your feet, and kills her
for lying.
By just talking. Now, a lot of Christians go, oh, no, Peter didn't kill him. Oh, really? Well, Peter knew what happened to the first guy that died, and then he warns the second one, I'm going to kill you too, and he kills him.
Yeah.
So this guy, Al Houghton, he's got this ministry, and he's on board with us. I told him a little bit, not too much, got to be careful. So he said, in God's love, there's five steps to God's love, and the church right now has stopped at layer one, acceptance. So you accept everybody.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
accept
forgive
murder,
everything.
Homosexual.
Yeah,
they get away with everything. Then, so there's where the church has fallen apart. There's where Pastor Warren, Dutch, myself, are making great strides to educate people. We go from God starts with acceptance, okay, then forbearance. The guy tells you he's a homosexual or something, you go, well, okay, but you know, you got to come out of that lifestyle, and you work with them for a short while, and they don't. So then you go to the third step, you warn them, and as you're warning them, you're praying, basically, God, either convert or kill them.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
you go to the next step, which is affliction, God afflicts them, and then the fifth step, termination, where God kills them. Now, that's the responsibility of the church as a church, but we, Dutch and myself, and Code 20, we're operating under the sphere of the civil magistrate. We don't have to accept, we don't have to forbear, we don't have to warn, we don't have to do affliction. We can jump right to termination in self-defense.
In self-defense, exactly.
In self-defense. And there's where your American Christian, they think, well, okay, the church can only accept. Well, that may be true, acceptance, forbearance, warning, affliction, termination. The church does not have the same responsibility as a civil magistrate. Dutch and I are operating as in the sphere of the civil magistrate. And when you read Romans 13:4, we are authorized, commanded by God, to be revengers using his law. That's why we keep hammering on the law of nations, the Ten Commandments, the law written on the heart, the rules of engagement, and that we are to use the sword, and this is a very loving thing. So if a murderer or raper comes in to bother Dutch, Stacy, and Lou, the pastor all of a sudden becomes the civil magistrate, takes his .308, warns them if he has time. If he doesn't, he just whacks them. And that is fulfills agape love, is the fulfilling of all love. So we picked up this guy, Al Houghton. We'll be working with him in the future. He's the real deal. So we got Code 20. We got two moles in two major terror cells. We got the firestorm over the high schools in Corona, Murrieta, Temecula. We got Larry Wick. And now we got this guy, Al Houghton. And our next step, we're working with the South Sudanese. I've been invited to go and meet with the president of South Sudan.
Amen.
And it comes right back to who? It comes back to Warren Campbell, Dutch, and everything. If you give up, you get nothing. So all you guys sitting on your panties saying, oh, we don't know what to do. There's only two or three of us. Let's see. There's Pastor Warren. There's Dutch Jones. And there's Steve Klein. And we're turning this place upside down.
And each of us do differently as to our gifts that God gave us.
Amen.
Yeah. I'm not a preacher. So the pastor preaches. I'm a trainer sometimes. And that's what I do. I like to get the information out. Steve's on the street in the faces of the enemy. Preparing the battles in court, preparing the battles on the curb, and it's everybody has a calling in this battle. And to say that, well, I don't think it's the Islamic problem, I think it's everything, well, you got to start somewhere. Why not get the training doing this and then apply it to whatever your favorite evil is? Because these things will work with everyone. That's the cool
Absolutely.
Thing. We're not doing anything new. We're doing proven styles. I had a Josh was in here Sunday going through our history section and all that, And I didn't realize that he did the same thing, I mean, exactly the same stuff you were doing in the Marine Corps way earlier. I thought he had studied what you'd done, but he was also in that stuff in the modern sense. And he picked out a book that we have. It's the Time Life Guerrilla Warfare section. It's like a whole section of books on World War II. He picked the guerrilla and partisans one out, and he looks at pictures. He goes, these are the Dalmatian resistors. Oh, these are the Greek resistors. He knew all of it. So he has a specialty. He took the time to join the military to learn these things. He got horribly wounded. He's not letting them keep him down. He's going back to college. I see a great leadership potential in him. And
big time.
And
he's very bright.
But yet he's going to add to it. And we would not have him coming here to the church if it hadn't been for the outreach that Code 20 is doing. He never would have heard of us. He doesn't roll in those circles. He doesn't know about the free church movement. He didn't know about the militia movement. But God will use us to scrape up the residue of his people that are willing to fight. And we're not going to get anything done if we're not out there taking risks and chances. So don't sit here and go, oh, I'm so afraid of going to jail. Oh, I don't want to handle it. You know, like the rabbis in defiance, you know. Oh, we'll just stay here in the ghetto. Everything's going to be okay. And then the one brother goes, okay, fine. You've heard your rabbi speak. Those who want to live, come with me. And I don't mean to get melodramatic, but that's what we're doing. Those of you that want to fight and want to defend the American way of life, and more importantly, the Christian heritage that we have, it's time to answer a call and to do your part. Whatever that part is, you and God decide what your part is, not me and Steve or the pastor. You guys have to decide what that is, and you're only going to figure that out by exercising your rights and your beliefs.
Absolutely. Just go out. I want to tell everybody that I've been out on the streets probably, including with Warren Campbell. Warren Campbell, I went out at least once, maybe twice with him, I'm not sure.
Was
but I've been out at least.
Sodomites in San Francisco?
Times.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
1,500 times, 2,000 times. I've been out a lot. I've never been arrested. We do it right. We do it biblically. When there's a time to get arrested, I'll get arrested. When there's a time for me to get killed, I'll get killed. As I tell them, the Muslims, they say they're going to kill me. I go, as soon as Jesus takes his protective mantle away from me, I will die. It will not be you. It will be his will. So I'm not worried about it. But once again, if we do it with two or three people, now get a load of this. Mm-hmm. Our attorney, Michael Cumetta, is one of the top First Amendment attorneys in the United States. He and I have been involved in numbers and numbers of lawsuits and actions and everything else. Now, we have, because Pastor Warren Campbell and Dutch Jones keyed me in on South Sudan before I went out there to the conference. I didn't know about South Sudan.
Yeah.
So I started checking it out, and I asked a few people, and all of a sudden, I run into this South Sudanese gentleman, William Levi, very nice man, wonderful man, and I sent him an email. Boom, we hit it off real good. I had him on my television show. He says, hey, Steve, anytime you want to go to South Sudan and meet the president of South Sudan, I'll set it up. So we're setting that up. So then I went online, I checked out the Constitution of South Sudan, and sadly, after they've won the victory, the multiculturalist, politically correct State Department, Joe Biden, John Kerry, these guys have sent people over there to write their constitution, and I got to tell you, you can look at it online. Just go in the Constitution, South Sudan, goes into force July 9th. It's a piece of crap, and
wow.
I was talking to Michael Cumetta, our general counsel, the guy who's like Perry Mason when it comes to the First Amendment. And I said, Michael, it's disgusting. I looked at the Constitution. It's got multiculturalism, diversity, all this, you know, voodoo and all this other nonsense. And Michael said something really interesting. He said, why didn't they just follow the basic Constitution of the United States? I mean,
yeah.
It works. So here's the deal. I told Michael, look, it would be interesting, Michael, I want you to go over to South Sudan with me. I want you to meet the president of South Sudan. And wouldn't it be great, Michael, if you became the first attorney general for South Sudan?
That'd be cool.
Yeah, and a white man working with these very, very wonderful Christian brothers and sisters, black as they can be. What was that song that said the Black Warriors of Nubia?
Oh, isn't that great? Their national anthem got it so right.
The Black Warriors of
the Kush.
Nubia. Yeah, the Kush. That's cool. But I could just see Michael sitting down and rewriting this politically correct piece of garbage and basically going back and copying the Constitution as you and I talk about it. You know, we talk about the five-step program, proper theology, arm 3 to 5 people, create your own government, which is a better way to say organized based on the four charter documents, the Mayflower Compact, Declaration of Independence, Northwest Ordinance, and the Constitution with correct biblical slavery, because that's in there. Correct biblical slavery is in the 15th Amendment, and it's in the Northwest Ordinance, Article 3, Northwest Article of 1784 and 1787, correct biblical slavery is in there. But anyway, look at all this stuff from the Church of Korea. So all you guys out there saying, I know, Australia, why can't you do it? It's only me, Dutch, and Warren. We're doing it. And this thing's spreading like wildfire now through Southern California. I can't wait until the October conference.
Yeah.
And this stuff. I'm not sure if I'll bring William Levi, the fellow, the South Sudanese guy, to the conference or not. I think I'll get Al Houghton to come out. He lives in Yorba Linda, so that's right down the...
Just swing by and pick him up.
Exactly. I could drive by and pick him up, absolutely. Now, in all of this stuff, like I get this television show with 30 million people viewing it, and I present the ideas of Dutch Jones on there. In fact, I've gone on there and told them about Code 20, and I told them about Dutch Jones, and I told them if they want to learn how to do guerrilla warfare and how to shoot guns and stuff, they're getting interested. These guys are like Quakers and Mennonites, pacifists, and they're coming up and asking me, oh, Mr. Steve, we can come up and you teach us how to shoot and how to protect our family? I says, of course I will. It's just awesome. Again, Dutch Jones, the dude has some strokes. Where the hell did you come from, Dutch? All of a sudden you showed up. Where are you from, dude?
Yeah.
I don't even know where you're from. Tell me the story. That's awesome. You just show up and things just start cooking. It's great.
Well, sometimes people send you places. I actually was lost spiritually and physically living in a 4x4 when I made a left turn instead of a right turn to go to a campground. And I think she was 5 or 6 years old, said, Daddy, let's go to that church. I like that church. And I was like, I don't go to churches anymore. They let Daddy down. She's like, Daddy, I want to go to church. We wander into the church, and the short story is the pastor was doing a sermon on border security and how we should thank the Minutemen. I had just come back from like a 3-week stint on the border, and I was like, yeah. So, and I've been here ever since. We're trying to figure out if it was 5 years ago. We can't figure it out yet, but it's at least 4.5-5 years that I've been here. And much to the chagrin of some others, I've chased a few people off, I've heard. But you know what? If they're not about doing the work of our Lord Jesus Christ, they're just dead weight in the lifeboat. So, time to throw a few
over.
Rule
number one, get rid of. Rule number one in battle planning, find Judas Iscariot and get him arrested. Get him out of there.
Yeah, get him out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you were just back from border patrolling.
Yeah, I was down there at the Camp Minuteman, picked up my daughter for a week of what they call spring break, you know.
Right.
And I was supposed to go fishing with some parents from her school that said, hey, you know, there's this place called Three Rivers, and if you go up, da da blah, blah, blah. And I didn't write it down. They said South Fork. I didn't see the South Fork turn off. I took the North Fork turn off and drove by the church, saw a sign that said, listen to Vice Jarrett Radio. I turned it on, and they were playing all this great hillbilly music that I like, Christian hillbilly music, and had radio shows on that were talking about, you know, the New World Order and all that stuff, and I'm like, wow. So I went up the road about 8 miles, camped there illegally because you're not supposed to camp there, it's day use only, but we went fishing and all kinds of stuff. And Sunday rolled around, and my little one's like, Daddy, I gotta go to church. And I'm like, I don't like churches anymore. I hadn't been in about a year. And so she woke us up Sunday morning, you know, at 10 o'clock. Church started at 10, so at 10:15, I'm standing in the parking lot in my long johns getting dressed to go to church. And my daughter, Anthea, dressed on the way down the hill, and we went in, and the music had just stopped, and the pastor started giving his now famous sermon on on illegal immigration. So it was great. And like I said, I've been here ever since.
Amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's how God works. Little girl says, Daddy, let's go to church.
Yep.
It's amazing. It's amazing. This whole thing right now, I don't know. Dutch, you and I have been working on this stuff for years and years and years. You've been more in the New World Order.
Yeah.
I'm more in Islam. If people are concerned about the New World Order, which I am, I'm just more concerned. I think that Islam will kill us quicker. But if your ball game is the New World Order, then get off your donkey.
Mm-hmm.
Find out where they are, and if you want to use, I can write the letters and get the legal help for you. I can get police protection, sheriff protection. If you find some place where there's a stronghold of the New World Order and you want to go out there and demonstrate with police protection, sheriff protection, in any of the 50 states of the United States, just let me know. I will do it for you. In fact, I'll tell you what, the first two people that want to do that, I will pay all of my expenses. I don't care if it's New York, South Dakota, Alaska, Hawaii. Hawaii's cool. I'll pay my whole way, my whole expenses. I'll set up the whole deal. I will teach you how to do the outreach, if it's New World Order, Islam, abortion, whatever you want to do. I'll do the first two for free. And then from then on, people, if they want more help, because this stuff, it's starting to catch like wildfire. It's going good. The stuff that Pastor Warren Sr., we moved from Santa Monica. Is that where he used to live, Santa Monica?
Yeah, he was down in Santa Monica. Warren Lee moved up here in the early 60s, 61, 62, right around in there, and started here.
He had no idea about Islam. I think he knew about the New World Order. He had no idea about Islam. He had no idea about Dutch. He certainly didn't know about Stacy and Lou and Ruger.
Yeah,
that's the way God works. I mean, I am so thrilled with what's going on up there with just two or three people. Okay, now I'm going to switch gears real hard because a lot of you know I do the Middle East Christian TV with 30 million viewers in Egypt. Most of you don't know. Dutch knows. Dutch has always got his, Dutch and Lou are always doing their intel. The Muslim Brotherhood is starting to consolidate. They're starting to murder the Christians. They murdered 12 Egyptian Christians today, burned down the church, injured 250. I listened to a little bit of it when I called into the studio to find out what I'm supposed to do this week. It's really sad, but out of this, this is how God moves people, just like in the old days. He'd bring in the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Greeks, the Romans, the Egyptians, all these people to conquer Israel to get them to start understanding, hey, you got to listen to God. You got to do it right. Deuteronomy 28, you got to follow the principles of Christian warfare. The church has its sphere that operates in is to teach, to bring up elders, to keep people, to bring them to the Lord, to justification, salvation, and then as soon as they're saved, they go into sanctification, but the church is not supposed to pick up the sword and do the killing. Now, the Puritans brought that to a real apex in the Westminster Confession and the London Baptist Confession of 1689. But just because Pastor Warren Campbell is a pastor, just like Muhlenberger was a pastor in one of the churches, he's up there with his robe on, takes off his robe, and he's got his officer's uniform on. He walks outside. He's no longer representing the church.
Mm-hmm.
He's representing the civil magistrate as a sword, but he's still operating. His rules of engagement are based on the Ten Commandments, the law written on the heart, the law of nations. So this stuff is now, I'm telling you, these Muslims in Murrieta and in Temecula, Corona, they're looking for Jim and me. They want to kill us. It's no big deal. They do. Then as I tell them, look, you have no idea. We got Lou ready to go, and I got other young guys, and if they kill me, I swear I'm going to laugh and say, you think I'm gone? I was a piece of cake. You wait till you see the wild man like Lou when he comes and hunts you down in the name of the Lord.
Our soldiers returning with their minds enlightened to what's really going on over there. I got a question here. I don't know if you've seen this. on barenakedislam.com, barenakedislam.com. They have a video. I tried to watch it. I couldn't get through it. Of two children being, a little boy and a little girl, being beheaded in Indonesia for, I think it was theft. They were being beheaded. And this kind of harsh reality that's out there that all of America, well, not all, but most of America want to deny, the placators, the concession-making people. You know, I watched a video the other day of a child having his arm run over for theft and crushed.
Yep. I've seen that.
Yeah, and just, I mean, I'm not surprised at the horror that Islam produces. I'm not surprised by it, and I don't like it. I don't like to see it all, but it's there, and we need it. We need to share, satanic. We need to share that with these milquetoast Christians and get them to go, hey, yeah, you can take out Steve, you can take out these leaders, but there's going to be a legion of good Christian men behind them to stand in the gap. Not to revenge, because that's not what it's about, but to stand for Christ and to bring Islam to where it needs to be, abolished. And do away with it. It is not a religion. It is a system of life. It is an organized crime. It has never been a religion. There are several theories on how it was started. I'm of the belief, I believe Total Onslaught, the stuff that I've seen, I forgot that doctor's name. What's his name from Total Onslaught, Lou? And I can't remember that it was actually manufactured by evil popes to have a foil to create conflict. And, you know, it doesn't matter where it came from. It's still of Satan. And it's not a religion. So to say that, oh, they have a First Amendment right to do what they're doing, no, they don't. They're not a religion. Does the mafia have a First Amendment right to do what it does? No. Do street gangs who trade in human life and drugs and guns and sex slaves have a right to exist under the First Amendment? No. So it's a pretty clear-cut concept for me, and I am amazed and I don't understand how the soccer moms and NASCAR dads don't seem to get it so readily.
Yeah, it's. I think it goes back to the preaching of the church. The church has been chickified, and that's where Pastor Warren comes in. This former naval jet pilot, Al Houghton, he says that repeatedly through his book, that the men have been castrated. And I went and listened to him do a presentation the other day, and, man, he was sounded like you and me and Pastor Warren teaching. So once again, you know, he's just starting to come on board. His ministry has been primarily in the pro-life ministry, and now he's starting to ask me a lot of questions about Islam. But once again, the New World Order, that's your hot button. Then I want to challenge you. Why aren't you doing something about it? You just sitting around drinking beer and talking big?
Yeah.
Why aren't you doing something about it? I'm tired of people telling me I'm doing everything wrong, and I go, okay, fine, teach me. Would you please teach me? And they look at me like, we don't know what to do. I say, oh, you don't know what to do, but you're coming out and criticizing me, telling me and Dutch that we don't know what we're doing, yet we're having success after success after success. I would bet, because I used to be primarily pro-life, I'll bet there's at least 250 to 500 kids who are 12 to 15 years old now because of what I've done, and there's other stuff. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying, look, one guy goes out. So all the big talkers, like when I did my presentation there, you may or may not remember when it was the October presentation, you were doing a great job.
Yeah,
until
I
scared
range.
The heck out of you when I yelled at you. Somebody said, well, aren't you too confrontational? It was a question. It was a written-down question, and I just looked out there and I said, maybe I am, but please, all of you people who have been to a mosque and witnessed to a Muslim, would you please raise your hand? I looked out there and went, oh, not one hand went up. I went, well, I might be terrible, but I'm better than you because I show up.
That was when you and Peter Hammond were taking the questions.
Yeah,
that was pretty funny. Don't you think you're too confrontational? I was like, what? My question would be, don't you think you're too wimpy? Don't you think you're hiding?
For a hamburger today, I would gladly repay you on the following Tuesday, wimpy.
Well, that's what it is. They're selling out their future for false security today, you know, and they're just saying, well, if we leave the Muslims alone, it's like having I look at it as simple as this. you find out on the corner of your house there's a hornet's nest. You go, well, I don't want to get stung, so I'm going to leave it alone. And next week you go out, it's three times the size that it was, and eventually the whole side of your house is one big hornet's nest, and you're like, oh, now I got to move because I didn't want to tackle it when it was small and insignificant with a, you know, with a hose or a can of spray because, you know, I didn't want to go over there and get stung, and I didn't want to bother them. And that's the way I look at it. People deal with the enemies of Christ. Well, when it's a small problem, aren't you just being mean to them? They're not bothering anybody. Well, that's when you should do it. Haven't you ever heard Barney Fife nip it in the bud? That's what we're supposed to do. When do you pull out weeds? When they start, not when they get 6 feet tall and pollinate or go to seed. And that's what the American people, just the procrastination and the inability to deal with the problem until it gets ugly. We buy Band-Aids rather than vitamins as a people. If you look at the statistics, people are more willing to deal with, you know, outrageous cures for disease rather than doing maintenance. We don't buy a lot of maintenance drugs or herbal solutions or eat good or exercise as a people. But as soon as we get some kind of horrible cancer related to what we're eating or heart attack because we're all fat, then we want immediate cures for everything, and we throw all the money in the world at it when all we really had to do was just start living the way we were supposed to in the beginning. You know, I'm guilty of it too, but I at least acknowledge it. I'm man enough to say, yeah. You know, I saw it, and I'm trying to change it. And it's just—it's strange. Americans, it's like they want to retrofit everything to make it work rather than plan it properly. And that's what they're doing with the Islam problem. It's what they're doing with the New World Order problem. They're just like, well, and I honestly, and I get a few people that are, well, until they're in my neighborhood, I'm not going to worry about it. It's like, okay, you know, sure, you don't live in what is it, Detroitistan now. So you don't have to worry about it. But the people in Detroit, though, you know, massive white flight, 20% drop in population in Detroit, but an increase in Islam. And exactly. So they ignored it. We lost Detroit, folks. It's gone. It's done. The population shifted there. Exactly. We'll probably never get it back intact. It'll have to be taken back if you know, depending on what God's plan is. So. And
absolutely.
look all over Europe, look, you know, all these nations that are allowing, you know, that didn't deal with it when they were at 2%. And, now there's nothing they can do. We just had some maniac here. I think it was a California flight. He got up and stormed the cockpit again yesterday, you know, and people say, oh, this stuff doesn't go on here. Yeah. Another Muslim guy got up. He took out the stewardess. She wasn't trained enough, but there was a ex-cop and I think a retired Secret Service guy that pummeled this dude and zip-tied him. And, you know, they had to land the plane somewhere in Arizona, I think, emergency landing to get him off the plane. But he just started screaming, Allahu Akbar, and attacked the door. Fortunately, the doors are so armored, he's not going to get in. But they're still out there. And just by you lying to yourself... Yeah, it just happened yesterday.
It happened?
Yeah, and...
Well, we got to contact that airline to get a stewardess to sign up with
Larry Wick. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I guess he knocked down the stewardess, and so then two men and the passengers. And one lady said, I was so scared, I just sat there. I didn't know what was going on. He just started mumbling to himself over and over again, God is great, God is great. And then he stormed the door, and I'm like, well, as soon as he started doing that, he should have got nailed in the seat before he even got up, you know?
Sure.
Interesting. Yeah, they need to keep frying pans on the plane, Stacy says. The stewardess could use that. El Kabongdom.
Hey, as Dutch and Stacy and Lou do, carry these big, beautiful ink pens.
Yeah. You've got to arm yourselves. I talked to Larry Wick, and I sent out that email saying no guns, no knives. I have to say that because our church, everybody carries guns and knives. I also put in there no pens and cones, and Larry Wick said back, no, they can have pens and cones, that's fine. I said, actually, that was mostly a hollow request because we're not that literate and we're not that good at self-grooming, so there won't be any pens or cones anyway. You didn't return yet.
I don't know.
I just sent that this morning.
What's the pastor's son with the little boy? What's his name?
Andrew.
He gets up there. Yeah, he looks like Elvis Presley, and I think he combs his hair, too. I think he's got a comb.
Yeah.
He can take some terrace. And what's he about?
4 or 5 years old.
About 3 feet tall,
yeah.
3.5 feet tall.
And he's got a little micro guitar that he plays and sings with the band.
That dude's trip. He is funny.
Yeah.
He is funny.
Yeah, I get it.
He'll be a great warrior.
Yeah,
he... I want to go back to... second. No, go ahead. Go
I was going to say one last thing on Andrew. He saw my pistol the other day, and he looks at it. He goes, is that a real gun? I go, yes, it is. He goes, my daddy says when I'm older, he's going to train me to use one of those. And I said, he sure will.
listen to us. We're laughing. We're loving. We know that Andrew's going to be safe, just like Lou, Stacy, my wife. Doesn't matter. When I go out and there's some bad-looking hombres, I know it's the same way with Stacy. My wife is not afraid at all when I'm around. I want to get back to the two moles that I've been working with.
Sure, we got about 8 minutes. We can finish that up in 8 minutes.
Okay, the two moles I've been working with. The one, I listened to him, and because of some of the signs I was reading between the lines, what he told me, and I said, okay, you're done, get out, you're not going back to that place again. I don't want to talk too much about it more than that, but it's the stuff that Dutch and I do, or magic, guys like us who've been out there. If you're out there with Code 20, contact Dutch. Let Dutch get the story, then run it by. Dutch can probably answer everything. Now, the second guy that infiltrated this active cell, I told him, I did not tell him, be careful. I did not tell him, watch your step. I said, dude, balls to the wall. Go for it. Get in there. Get all the dope, get all the information you can get, find out about these guys. So two different situations, two different suggestions, and in each case I told the two fellows, the moles, I said, look, you're the operative on the ground at the location. You're the final judge. I just make suggestions. You are the ones that make the decision and do what you want to do. And then in this, both cases, they listened and they agreed with me. I was very happy that the one guy is already out. He's done his job. He's out. I know what's going on. And he's got his own group, and he's already contacted them. The other guy, I told the other guy, I said, do not even tell anybody in your group because you're still active. Do not tell anybody, nobody, because loose lips sink ships.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody will make an act. Somebody, it is amazing. I know, Dutch, you and I, we find out so much information providentially by accident, just like when you found a church in Korea providentially because your dear little girl said, Daddy, I want to go to church.
Right.
I mean, to me, that's how God builds the stuff. And you guys are just sitting around saying, we don't know what to do. Well, why don't you read the Bible?
Listen.
Go read 2 Kings chapter 11. 2 Kings chapter 11, you will find the greatest Code 20 cell warfare chapter in the Bible, how they rescue, like, the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 Kings chapter 11. And then, go out and do it. I mean, I think I said earlier, I've been out like 1,500 to 2,000 street evangelization, confrontation, blah, blah, blah. Well, people, the first 20 or 30 times I went out there, I looked like a buffoon. I sounded like an idiot. I did it. It was like my first day in boot camp. Remember the first 2 days or two,
oh, yeah.
first 2 weeks in boot camp? Didn't matter what, you couldn't do anything right.
Everything,
they were on
yeah.
you like ugly on eight. Couldn't do anything right.
Yeah.
But then, slowly but surely, you start learning. It's basically, it's the same questions, the same statements, the same heresy, the same nonsense, and after a while you get pretty good so that now I can go out there and I'm basically asleep, and it's like, dude, I tell people, I said, dude, you're boring me. Is this the best you can do? You really?
Yeah, ask and answer.
I just turn to my wife or my friends and go, you take over, this guy is boring me.
Yeah, there's no point.
Don't be afraid, go out and do it.
Yeah, you know, you get so many people that are stuck on stupid that, you know, they're sent out by stupid people to do a stupid mission that's unholy, and they don't even realize the logic that they lack in their argument.
Yep.
But yeah, yep. There's the neat thing too about being proactive and finding out what these folks are doing, the enemy's doing out there. It just makes sense to do it because, you know, and you could probably talk to this more, but I see that most of our government agencies is being hobbled. Even what good people there still are in the FBI, you know, all that stuff, they're not allowed to go into the mosques.
That's why we got Code 20. That's exactly why they are so hobbled there. And I think they really, the ones, the bona fide patriots that are still in, the older guys, I think they really admire Dutch and myself and the guys who are out doing what we're doing. The other ones, they don't care about America. They certainly don't care about the name of Christ. They don't care about the church. They don't care about expanding the kingdom. So, once again, just go out and do it. Don't worry about it. You know what? If you do everything wrong, but you walk away, you're okay. It's no big deal. It's no big deal.
Hmm. Yeah, and the key thing to remember is that everything we do is singular in purpose when you really boil it down. We're just trying to serve Christ. We're not trying to be heroes. We're not trying to brag. We're not trying to better ourselves. You know, we're not going to get rich doing this, unlike some groups out there that, you know, collect money to sell you T-shirts and things like that. Because if we remain Coram Deo, you know, in the face of God, at the throne of God, everything else falls into place. We protect our families, we protect our neighbors. And if we ever came across something, a chunk of information that was imperative to saving lives, whether we thought it was false flag or not, but we thought it was actionable intelligence, what would we do with it, Steve?
Big time, we just pass it along to the guys who can do something.
Yeah. We're not going to go in there guns a-blazing and kick in a mosque and take the law into our own hands.
And I
know you've already covered that, but I feel like I have to drive the point home because we have a lot of stupid people that listen to this show with a paradigm and an agenda, and I have to make sure that they get it. That's not what we're about, you know?
Absolutely not.
No. And they go, well, that's terrible. They want to call 911 if they find out, you know, Abdul's going to blow something up. Well, you should be doing that, too. You know, and eventually the FBI may go, yeah, we know about that. That's one of our fake things we're doing. Who cares what happens with it? But we've done our duty. We've done our duty. Because it doesn't matter if it's a false flag, CIA-induced, George Bush-induced, whatever. It doesn't matter. If American civilians are targeted, that's our problem. And we have a duty to react to that. So I want to make sure that's very clear for the stupid people listening to this. It's funny.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's funny, I get more stupid questions in English than I do in Farsi now, because it seems like more Americans don't get it. The enemy knows what we're doing, so they just send hateful, you know, poorly worded things that I have to translate. But the Americans, the people closest to us, are the ones asking the really stupid questions.
Yeah, I think that goes back to the chickification, the sissification, the castration of the church, and where we started with this gentleman, Al Houghton. I learned a lot from him because my process of thinking as Dutch is correctly. We're specialists in the sword of the civil magistrate, the military, Code 20. We specialize in this. So I was very skeptical. I went and listened to this gentleman, and I thought, okay, he's operating into the sphere, sovereignty, jurisdiction of the church. So he's got these five layers of love, acceptance, forbearance, warning, affliction, termination.
Oh,
and then he really caught my attention. But the church can go on the offensive by praying in precatory psalms that God will kill evil leaders. That's all we can do. But as soon as we walk out of the church, and we become a member of a civil society under the civil magistrate properly, under alter or abolish and reinstitute, we pick up the sword using the law of nations, the law written on the heart, and then we can go out in self-defense and do what we do. I have never attacked anybody on the street. And in fact, I have never been attacked on the streets. There's one time where an attacker went after a person, and I stopped it, and I warned him, and I didn't have to do anything more.
Yeah. Well, Steve, you can't hear it, but the music's playing. I want to thank you for calling in. I want to thank you for being part of this, letting me be part of what you're doing. And just stay safe there, brother. Remember, folks, what we do here is purposeful. It's not whimsy. It's not macho. It's not to build our own resumes. So get off our backs, join the fight, or get out of the way. And just remember, the sword is heavy, the battle is hard, but victory belongs to the Lord alone. And like so many times in the Bible, the Lord may ask us to take up the sword with him. And that's, he's asking us to take up the cause right now, and that's what we need to do right now. The sword will come later. Right now, it's the cause. So thank you for listening. I want to thank all of you, especially the pod people who tune in later. Check out DutchJones.info. Check out AbolishIslam.com, AbolishIslam.com. And we will be back tomorrow with some more stuff. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. God bless.
Okay, we turn it down. Good night, all.